Until 11, local, national and international affairs. Plus some goss and scandal. You're listening to Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
Davina Montgomery is in, the editor of Geelong Business News. Good morning, Davina.
Hey, Mitch, how are you going?
Very well indeed. It's good to have you in the studio with us today. I think first of all, we may as well talk about the local government elections. What we're trying to do here is to make sure that we can speak to as many people as possible so that the listeners out there can make an informed choice. And then on our website, mitchellsfrontpage.com, all the audio of the interviews is being uploaded onto one single page. And I'm already seeing on our website stats that a lot of hits are being directed straight at that page. People are going there, having a look around, listening to a few candidates speak, so that hopefully by the time we get to election day, you'll be able to go through the candidates in your area, hit the play button and listen to all of them actually speak, rather than looking at that sort of ballot pack that comes out with just a quick blurb and a photo.
That's a fantastic thing, Mitch, and really that is exactly what we need more of. You know, we know people are interested. People want to know more about who is interested, who's putting their hand up for council. But you're right, being able to actually listen to someone, even it's different to sitting down and reading a story about what someone said, because, you know, as you and I both know, as journalists, what goes in tends to be just, you know, maybe a tenth of what's actually been said. Mm. So being able to sit down and give people that chance to, in their own time, have a listen to the candidates in their area will hopefully let people make a really informed decision, to feel comfortable with their decision, and you know, and can throw a few interesting questions back at this new lot of councillors that will be coming in.
Absolutely, and of course we've got our candidates forums coming up on October 3rd and October 10th. We're doing a separate forum for each ward. We've already got overwhelming response from all the people that have run that have said yes, we're coming along, only a couple of apologies, which is great. And I would encourage everyone out there to submit a question that we can then read out at the forum. If they can't, we're going to take questions from the floor in person, but if they can't be there in person, type up a question, send it, and then we can read it to the candidates. mitchellsfrontpage.com/ask is where you can do that.
It's a terrific thing, Mitch. It's exactly what we need.
So, do you have any observations on the way it's all going at the moment?
Yeah, look, I think we were chatting a little bit off air, and my feel on it at this point is that I'm hearing lots of bits and pieces coming from around the traps. And, of course, we've still got some more people to put their hand up. They've got, you know, September 21 is the official nomination period.
Long way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's been great to see so a range of people that haven't actually nominated before, and we're starting to get some real diversity in the candidate in the candidate pool, which is fantastic. It was great to see Musha, I know, was speaking to you on Friday, nominating a young refugee from out in the northern suburbs, and that's really important because we're starting to get a sense of people who are bringing real passion and are coming in with a real agenda, not just a party political agenda, into council. And that's really where I think we lost our way with the previous council and probably the last decade of local council, was that it just got too bogged down in the personalities, too bogged down in the party politics. We really want people in there on the front, on issues, who are really genuinely thinking about what they can bring to their community.
Yep, I think there's a lot of hope going forward, which is always good to
absolutely
see.
Absolutely.
And of course, the G21 Stakeholder Forum was on Friday. Some great speakers, Senator Di Natale, Bill Shorten, Leader of the Opposition, Sarah Henderson. So it was all there, lots of sort of backwards and forwards between the parties.
Is it starting to feel a little bit like electioneering's getting earlier and earlier, Mitch?
I think that's right. Elaine said that we could have a federal election before the next state election. I don't think that's completely out of possibilities, particularly what we're seeing with Barnaby Joyce at the moment.
Absolutely. I think, you know what, at the moment with federal politics, just expect the unexpected.
And Sarah, interestingly, in her address said, "I'm not going to get political, mostly," and then got the knives out straight away and started attacking Darren Cheeseman and all that sort of thing. I thought that was quite funny.
I think anything that anyone says before "but" can kind of be taken with a grain of salt. Wait for the after bit, because that's what really matters. And any politician that comes in that says that they aren't going to talk politics, well, they're not doing their job, are they?
Incidentally, I don't know if you saw the front cover of the paper today, Joyce Takes Our Jobs, but I've got a feeling Sarah won't be very happy about this. Richard Miles is going to town on it and saying, you know, it's terrible that they're celebrating this, that we're giving the Northern Territory a go and taking Geelong jobs. Sarah apparently didn't return calls yesterday for comment. We've got her on the show next week, so I'll ask her then. But I think it's an interesting move, I've got to say.
Well, look, you know, Barnaby hasn't had a great run in the last few months, and he's a really interesting character. And you're probably a little bit like me, that I've had, you know, a fair bit of, been on the front line of a fair bit of Barnaby's commentary over the last 15 years or so. And for listeners that aren't aware, back in the day, before you used to get online and email things, everything used to come over on the fax. And Barnaby Joyce had to be the most prolific fax media release sender.
Really?
Of all of them. It was constant. It was a stream. So he's always been very proactive. He's always actually come in with quite a different agenda to what is quite typical of what we tend to hear from politicians who would typically play a very straight line. And during a lot of this period, we're talking about the John Howard era. So things were very rigid in federal politics and very carefully controlled.
Now it's very fluid, isn't it?
Well, Barnaby came from fluid at that point and he hasn't changed. So he's a man who thinks in circles. He looks around corners and he finds different ways of doing things. And I think this is Barnaby, you know, playing the game. This is him saying, well, you know, yep, I might be down a bit with everything that's happening with the Section 44s, but I'm going to try and make a win here. And I think he probably has. And I mean, it's, you know, we don't want to see any jobs leaving Geelong. We want all of our jobs as much as possible staying here, and we
Correct.
Want to be growing jobs. We are growing jobs in our region is one of the great pieces of news that's come out in the last year or so, is that there has been consistent and very real and strongly full-time jobs growth in the Geelong region. So we're doing that really well. We're actually doing manufacturing jobs well in this region as well, which would probably surprise people. If all you ever read is the Addy, you might find that there's some facts that are being left out of the equation, because the fact is that we do have quite strong net jobs growth, and that means jobs growth over the last 10 years has actually been growing at a strong rate. I think we've added something like around 60,000 jobs across the region, and that includes the period that we lost all of the Ford and Alcoa jobs as well. So we have been performing well in terms of jobs. The Northern Territory is struggling. They've got real issues in their fundamental economic base. Their housing market is in all sorts of trouble. It spiked very heavily, which means that they're in for a fairly sharp drop as well. They have been struggling in terms of their economic base, in terms of how much or how broad their economic base is. So in Victoria, we have a very broad economic base. We have obviously services driven. We've got a strong construction area. We still do have strong manufacturing. We're strong in the IT and the education sectors. So When one sector here is not doing so well, we've got something to balance it. In the Northern Territory, it tends to be a very narrow base. So at the moment, they're not doing so well. They're in a bit of trouble. I'm not surprised that Barnaby's gone in hard for these ones. You know, we'll just have to see. But at the end of the day, when we're talking about the CSIRO and we're talking about research and development in this country, if you want to sit there and you want to grow your economy for the next, not just the next few years, if you want to talk about growing your economy for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you back research and development. That's how you do it, because that's how things change. I mean, we think about the way that we live now, and I'm looking at my iPhone and, you know, we use Wi-Fi. We've got all of this technology. All of that came out of science and research. All of that came out of research and development. So even, and this is the thing about science, is that a lot of the things that actually get discovered aren't really for the things that they were researching in the first place. It's just a byproduct of something, another field that they were looking at. And then all of a sudden we get a piece of technology or a new way of thinking, a new system that that changes the way that we do things. So we have slashed our funding into science and research in this country. We've appallingly slashed climate research. I mean, of all the things to slash, something that's fundamental to our energy use. I mean, all of us out here are struggling to pay our energy bills, and yet we've got the scientists who can actually find better ways of managing how we approach climate change, the scientists that sit there and look at how we can better use energy, that can look into different forms of energy that will be coming in the future. Well, we cut the funding for all those people. You know, it's not a smart way to do it, and we can't call ourselves a smart country if we want to do it. So as much as I would say we definitely don't want those jobs leaving Geelong, and there are some very skilled people involved with the CSIRO in Geelong.
I'd have thought so. I wouldn't think you could just get anyone off the street to work for the CSIRO.
No, my brother used to work there, actually. He's a virologist, so he runs teams of researchers up in Newcastle these days. But he went from the CSIRO to Oxford and then over to London, and he was working there for about 13 years. And the kind of skills that he actually learned at the CSIRO led to a world-leading breakthrough over in London. But he couldn't have done that if he didn't have that work that he did here at the CSIRO. And as a result, you know, talking from a personal experience, he's been able to take that research. He's got research agreements and deals that he's done on a number of countries that all focus and come back to Australia and the research that's being done here. He does a bit of work up in Melbourne as well with teams there. So what we put into our researchers, we get back in so many multiples, and it does create more jobs, and they're high value jobs, and they bring great value to the community as well. I think we just need a lot more of them. We need them in Geelong, we need them in Darwin, we need them everywhere.
One thing I think was curious was, first of all, just looking at the seats, the coalition doesn't have any members in the Northern Territory. They've got one senator, but in the lower house, not a single member, whereas here we've got Kooranga Mats. I don't know if that motivated the decision.
Oh, look, I don't think you can ever discount the electioneering element of funding decisions these days. It is a fundamental truth of particularly federal politics, certainly in state politics to a large degree as well, that funding decisions and decisions on where things go is very much based around votes.
Mm.
So here in Geelong, we wouldn't have the NDIA head office, we wouldn't have WorkSafe, if it wasn't for the fact that people wanted the jobs, political parties wanted the jobs that are, wanted the votes, sorry, that are down here in Geelong, and they know that jobs equals votes.
Yeah. One of the things also that I think was interesting, you were talking about prices there of power and gas, and it's obviously on everyone's mind at the moment. The G21 stakeholder forum, a bit of the blame game going on. Bill Shorten said, yes, the government is responsible because of their indecision, but also don't discount the greedy power companies. He actually used that term, greedy power companies, which I thought was interesting. So it's a bit of a mess out there at the moment.
It is. Look, there's a lot of blame shifting going. It's an interesting one, Mitch, because I started writing about this about 7 years ago. Was when we first started looking at gas in particular. We looked at electricity as well. And it was all about power, and it was particularly around how the power system works. And at that stage, we knew that, you know, Alcoa was probably at some point in the future. We didn't realise how soon, but we knew that Alcoa at some point in the system was going to go, and that how fundamental Alcoa, that refinery at Point Henry, was to the state's power system. Because, of course, that's why we had the power station built. So we started looking at this, and one of the big things that came out, and again, this is about 7 years ago, one of the big things that I heard from within the industry, so it was very much on their agenda, was that we were facing a situation where we were going to be paying extraordinarily high gas prices because we were about to start exporting too much gas. Now, this is 7 years ago. These were people at the peak of the industry. So I'm talking about, you know, the heads of the Energy Retailers Association, the heads of the Energy Producers Association, very much on their agenda. The power companies knew exactly what was happening as well. So these were within the industry. They were talking to governments. So there is no politician now at a federal level who can say that this has come as a shock to them and that, you know, they're now going to try and deal with it. This has been on their agenda for a long time and they have failed.
I want to ask you about two things before we bring in our next guest, who is Trent Sullivan, candidate for Bellarine. First of all, in the Herald Sun today, the idea of fining politicians that behave badly in Parliament has been flagged rather than just the status quo where they get kicked out of Parliament. They actually want to hit them in the hip pocket. Do you think that's a good idea or not?
I don't know that any fine would be significant enough to make them pay attention. We know that politicians do love to be able to claim things and, you know, well, they work, most of them work pretty hard for their money, so they'll hold on to it fairly tightly. I'm not a big fan of fining. I think it's a little bit punitive and I'm not sure that it's exactly that great a way. But at the same time, I think that we give a lot of privileges to our politicians that we in the community do not get the same experience of. So perhaps a better way might not be fining them, but might actually be withholding some privileges. This is what I do with my kids when they're badly behaved.
And we're dealing with the same level of intellect. No, just kidding.
Can tend to be the same level of behaviour.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, for instance, we could turn around and think about systems where we go, well, if we as the community and as the funders of your roles aren't very happy with what you do, then maybe we'll push to put some systems in place that say that you no longer get your privileges paid up front, but you have to claim them back through the tax system like the rest of us do.
And final question, Trent, we'll move on to him next, but North Korea, I wanted to ask you about that. Do you have any thoughts on that? Very, very scary stuff.
It's really volatile. It is scary. It's incredibly volatile. It feels like it's on the knife edge. I don't know that Australia has a lot of power in this space, and I suspect that we don't. In terms of our negotiating ability, there's not a lot there. One interesting position that Australia does play in this is that we do sit very much between America and China, and they are the two nations that are going to have a say on this. I mean, at the end of the day, North Korea on its own could easily be taken care of by any of the super military powers that we have around the world. But, of course, that's not the way that the nations work, and that's certainly not the way the negotiation and foreign policy works. So we have a situation where we have North Korea, who's very much backed and aligned with China. And I'm sure that the powers that be in China are not particularly happy with the behaviour of the North Korean regime at the moment, because it's putting them in an incredibly difficult position. So do they press forward with their push to, you know, to democratise to a certain degree. How much emphasis do they put on their trade relationships with America, with, you know, South Korea, with Australia, with Japan, with so many other nations around the world? And these are major trading partners. You know, these are like, this is kind of like if a big issue is broken out over a fence in your street, and you've got the three or four biggest landholders who are in there, and you've got one tiny little person that owns something the size of a garbage bin that's sitting out the front, and they're the one causing all the problems, but they're really good friends with one of those landowners who sort of, you know, they're probably related to them, and they're sitting there and they've backed them in and kind of going, yep, okay, they're uncomfortable, they're a bit embarrassing, and I'm a little bit worried about them. I'm not sure that I can completely control them because they're having a tantrum right now, so I'm not sure what to do about it. And on the other side, you've got the big bully who's standing there going, well, you need to sort something out or I'm going to.
It's a very good analogy, and it's just interesting when people support someone, it's like, well, do they support someone regardless of what they do? At what point do they say, no, we're going to now take away that support? I think it's a fascinating conversation.
I think it is, and I think, you know, that we can tend to be a little bit too straight down the line and black and white in our initial responses. I think you hear a lot in the media about people just going in saying, we'll just go in and sort them out. And I know that Donald Trump's a great one for going in and just saying, well, we'll just go in and sort them out. But the fact is, it's just not that easy. And as we know, if you bring it down into that street level, and that's very much the kind of relationships that these people are trying to negotiate very carefully at the moment, there's a lot going on there, and they're very aware of what the repercussions could be.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's big things happening. Hey, if I can talk about streets and talk about local, Mitch, just before I head off.
Yes.
I walked up here today, and while it was really, really chilly, it's always a good chance to have a look around the city. And as most people will know, there is the roadworks going on in the centre of Geelong at the moment.
Mallop Street.
Absolutely. Yep. And there's a lot of small traders that operate in that area that are really struggling at the moment. I think it's turned away a lot of traffic, and it's quiet. It's really quiet. There's no one walking around. There's no cars around. So particularly for people who work in the city that might be thinking that Christmas is coming up, and I'm not going to tell you how many shopping days it is, because that is cruel, cruel punishment.
It's only September. What are you talking about?
But it will come up fast. So for anyone who is thinking about it, maybe just think about heading out there and, you know, just lay by a few Christmas presents. Start to get things going. Go and get your coffee in the centre of town just for the next few weeks. Maybe give the traders in there a little bit of love, because I think they could really use it.
I think that's really good advice. Go and support our traders in Mallop Street, who do a great job, and they haven't asked for all of this disruption, that's for sure.
Yeah, they're kind of taking the hit on our behalf, I feel, Mitch. You know, that we're all going to benefit from what's happening, but at the moment they're wearing the cost of it. So
spot on.
A little bit of love back might be nice.
Thank you, Davina. We'll catch up in 2 weeks.
Great to see you, Mitch.
Davina Montgomery, the editor of Geelong Business News. A break. Trent Sullivan will be in next, candidate for Ballarine Ward in the upcoming October elections.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.